San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Good evening, everybody. This is Richard Muzio. That's false advertising. Tonight, it's not Richard and Joe. It's just me, Richard. When I told Joe we were going to do a show about running, he went running out of the room and he didn't come back. So it's just me. But I got two great guests tonight. It's my Boston Marathon show. I think a lot of listeners know that my wife, Mary, is running the marathon on Patriots Day, which is April 18th. And 2 days before that, I'm going to be running a thing called the Blindfold Challenge for Perkins School for the Blind, a great charity just outside of Boston. So first half of the show is with the representative from Perkins School for the Blind. That would be Marla Runyon. Marla is an accomplished runner. And she, for example, in 2003, running the Boston Marathon, running a 2 hour and 30 minute race, was the number five woman overall and the number one U.S. woman in terms of finish. But her 2:30 time at Boston remains to this day the fastest Boston Marathon ever run by a visually challenged athlete. Marla is visually challenged, so that's male or female. And I believe Marla's personal record for a marathon is actually 2 hours and 27 minutes. Again, she's a San Diego State grad. We build them really, really fast out here in San Diego because you can run all year long, right, Justin? Because the weather's so incredible. So again, at 2:30 in Boston, she was number five overall, number one woman, and to this day, the fastest time ever at the Boston Marathon by a visually challenged athlete, either male or female. So Marla Runyon, great job back in 2003. Marla, are you there? How are you this evening?
I'm here. Thank you very much. I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, so Perkins School for the Blind, you guys are doing something really, really cool. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about Perkins itself. I was fortunate enough to be included on your marathon team back in 2012. It was a nice hot day there in April, about 93 degrees, and ran for you guys, which is a really cool experience. Right. But I've taken a couple of tours of your amazing facility, Perkins School for the Blind. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? And if anybody knows the name Helen Keller, it goes hand in hand with Perkins.
Right. Yeah. Perkins School for the Blind is the first ever school for the blind in the United States. We are the original. Some people know of us just as Perkins, but we are obviously known for our school. And Helen Keller, of course, is our most famous student. She attended Perkins, you know, back in her days, as did her teacher, Ann Sullivan, mm-hmm. who was also a student of Perkins. And we're based in Watertown, Massachusetts, just outside Boston. Perkins today is ever-changing and evolving, and we are always trying to remain as current and relevant in our world as possible. We have an amazing international program, so we reach people not just here in Watertown and not just here in the United States. We reach people around the world, and I think Perkins has a tremendous global influence related to the education of children who are blind and visually impaired. And so that's just what's so amazing about our institution is we have such an impact on such a large scale, and that's why it's so great to be a part of Perkins.
Yeah, and I saw one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life at the school. That was Helen Keller's globe.
Yes, the ever-famous globe. As we say, it's older than Braille. It doesn't even have
Braille. It is older than Braille, exactly.
It's older than Braille. I want to say 1830 was the creation of the famous globe.
And, it's almost,
you know, we've had, you know, former presidents.
200 years old.
Yeah, it's got this legacy of if anyone who comes and who's famous, who's visited Perkins, has touched the infamous globe. So,
and even non-famous people like myself have touched it.
And myself as well. It's awesome. It's that's our museum right in our Howe Building. It's a great, amazing place to walk through, and just you're walking through the history of Perkins en route to the future of Perkins. So it's just a great environment to be in.
Yeah, and you mentioned the word digital earlier. I know the world has changed dramatically in the last 15, 20 years in terms of how people communicate, exchange information, and so on. Obviously, being visually challenged has always been, posed its whole, you know, a unique set of opportunities and challenges. But certainly now that we're in a digital age where people communicate by mm-hmm. cell phones and email and texting and so on, I think the way that people who have visual challenges, have to get through the world, it's much, much different than it used to be, correct?
It is very different. It is very different. And, you know, one of our main missions of Perkins is really the concept or the of accessibility, of broadening accessibility in all domains, whether it's the physical space or the digital space. And so one of our services that we just recently kind of taken on, and we're building the service, and we've already had some really well-known clients in that we're helping individuals and organizations and institutions make their websites accessible. So, you know, as we all know, the web is sort of a mandatory part of our lives and how we get through it. You can't go to college if you can't, you know,
right.
get on the web and take a class, right? You can't check in and get your syllabus and all these things. You can't apply for a job. You know, you can't, you know, I even do my grocery shopping online. I do, I do online banking. So if you think about what technology has offered us in so many ways, it's an avenue for incredible independence for someone who, for example, like myself, who doesn't drive. But at the same time, when websites aren't built the right way and when developers aren't thinking about accessibility, they end up creating barriers. And then all of a sudden we have sites that we can't use and that we can't complete our transaction or we can't, take that online course. And so one of the things we're trying to do here at Perkins is help institutions, help companies learn how to develop an accessible site. So we'll review their site and we'll tell them what's going on, what the barriers are, and we'll help them fix. And then we'll help them fix it so that they're going to have a larger audience. It's going to be more universally accessible to everyone. Someone who comes in with a screen reader, for example, mm-hmm. who can't see your site, can still go in and fill out that form and still make that transaction or buy your product. And that can all happen as long as your site is coded the right way. And so we're trying to get the word out and help companies do it the right way.
Yeah, and isn't the challenge even greater, though, than for children, for, say, adults who might be 40 and 50 who are visually challenged, who, you know, shall we say, grew up before the digital age and mm-hmm. now have had to make adjustments into the digital age as opposed to being born into it?
Definitely. It's definitely more challenging if you are someone who is losing their vision as an adult or later in life and you're sort of in this place where what resources are available to me? How do I do this? You know, mm-hmm. how do I go through my day now? Everything's different. And there's always a learning curve and a period of learning how to do things differently. I always used to say when I started losing my vision when I was 9 and had normal vision up until that point. And my attitude as a child and as a teenager was like, oh, I can do that. I can do that. I just have to do it a little different than how you would do it, but I can do it. And I think that's a hard concept to get, because I think as an older adult, even now the age I am now in my 40s, it's hard to change how you do things. You're used to how you go about your day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty dramatic lifestyle change when you start losing vision. But, you know, the message I want people to know is it doesn't mean you can't do something. It means you can. It's just you have to learn how to do it differently. And there might be tools you have to use. There might be technology you have to use. There's just another way of doing it, and we want to help. You know, that's one of the things I'm really feel so passionate about is showing people, helping people, being an example, but also saying, look, there's another way of doing that, and let me show you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might even be not as complicated as we thought, you know. So I think there's a lot of transition and a lot of learning and a lot of educating and guidance that is a part of what we do here at Perkins. So,
how many students do you serve approximately, both locally as well as, shall we say, worldwide?
Well, that is a big number. Oh, my goodness. I could start with the smaller numbers. We have on campus about 200 students on campus.
An absolutely beautiful campus, by the way.
It's beautiful. It's about 40 acres. We have five educational programs. We have our deaf-blind program, our lower school, our secondary program. We have an infant-toddler program. And then we also have an outreach, it's called community programs. So community programs are our TVIs, our O&M instructors, that's orientation and mobility instructors, a TVI is a teacher of the visually impaired. They serve students who are visually impaired all throughout New England. So some of them, they are never here. They're never on campus. Mm-hmm. They're out serving students in Maine, Connecticut, New Hampshire, all over the state of Massachusetts. So we have a huge reach in that area as well as students who are not on campus but in their public schools, and we reach out and support them in their public schools. In addition, we have what's called outreach, which is our on-campus programs for kids to come to Perkins for a two-week camp, for example, on independent living skills, or a four-week camp in the summer where they learn a lot of the skills that you and I or someone who has always had vision might not even realize they learned just by watching.
Mm-hmm.
So when you grow up through life, you learn so much just by watching and observing and seeing your mom and dad make dinner,
right?
Or seeing, you know, you're seeing all the...
Or siblings particularly. Hey, Marla, I apologize.
Yeah,
we have to take a quick break.
Right.
So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Marla Runyon from Perkins School for the Blind. So everybody sit tight. We are back. It's Your Money and Your Life. It's Richard Musio flying solo. No Joe Vecchio tonight. I gave Joe the night off so he could relax and do some other things. I think he's doing one show by himself in May, so I can take one Saturday night off. But we're on the line with Marla Runyon from Perkins School for the Blind in Waterton, Massachusetts, near Boston. Marla, you were mentioning with families, like how a lot of kids, for example, learn by observation from parents, from siblings. Obviously, if one's visually impaired, they have a whole different way of learning things, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. So a lot of the things that kids learn who are sighted, they learn just by watching. We have to teach those skills. I mean, we, believe it or not, whether it's cooking, whether it's, you know, getting dressed or doing laundry or, you know, I can't even, you know, shaving. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just watching someone do it and then being able to do it yourself. It's when you can't see someone do it, you have to do it yourself, and you have to learn by experience. And so that's kind of a major theme of what we do here at Perkins is teaching by doing, and
yeah, exactly.
A lot of experience-based instruction.
How long have you been with Perkins?
I've been here 3 years.
3 years,
I've been
okay.
here 3 years. You know, I'm a former San Diego San Diego State alum.
That's what I heard, that you're an Aztec.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am, yeah. So I'm now out here in New England.
How'd you find your way to San Diego, and how'd you find your way back to Boston? I'm just curious.
Well, I grew up in Southern California,
okay.
And I went to San Diego State for both my bachelor's and my master's back in the 80s and 90s, and then lived in Oregon for several years, and then just recently came out to Massachusetts 3 years ago.
Oh, neat stuff. Yeah, so real quickly, my personal experience, and with Perkins, with regard to my vision, I in 1996 lost sight in one eye when one of my kids accidentally kicked me in the eye, and then 5 years later in 2001 had a series of retinal tears and detachments in the other eye, which were very serious and necessitated, I've lost track of how many surgeries where I had to have an oil covering over the eye. So at that point I was 0-for-2, and so from basically October of 2001 to January of 2003 I couldn't see while I was having all of this work going on. And I wasn't a runner before then, but I couldn't exercise for about 15 months because part of my recovery, I actually had to lay motionless for 90 straight days for 12 hours out of every 24 in sort of a semi-upside-down position so that gravity would promote healing in the eye, because if I had any more issues with scar tissue, I wasn't going to get my sight back. And so I gained like 40 pounds. So, you know, I went into this weighing 190 and came out of this weighing 230. You know, the stuff your eye doctor doesn't tell you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because my diet got bad. I mean, I just, when you're in your mid-40s and you're not moving because you can't.
Yeah.
So I took up jogging and then discovered after I lost some weight that I was a pretty good long distance endurance runner. So I decided I wanted to do some things, you know, to try to, you know, help some good causes, and Perkins being one. So I ran for you guys 2012 in the brutal heat, the record breaking heat of April 2012. Yeah. And then a couple years earlier, did Boston in 2010 when it was about 33 degrees. In fact, my joke is the average temperature when I've run Boston has been 63. It was 33 one year and 93 the next year. But that's an average of 63, right? So,
right. That sounds about right.
It's about right. So anyway, this is a financial show, so I can do math, right? So anyway, it was just a really cool experience, you know, running for Perkins. But that was really what, you know, got me into running, was I needed to get my health back and just, you know, doing general exercise or whatever wasn't going to work. I had to just change my entire lifestyle, which I did. And so, but it was because of my vision loss. And I'm fortunate. I got about 100% vision back in one eye and about 80% in the other. So I've been very fortunate, even though it's a continuing challenge. You know, today, for example, I was having a really hard time just reading because one eye sees far away and one eye sees up close, and I'm always trying to match. But hey, it beats the alternative, as the saying goes. But I know you guys are doing some real cool things with regard to what is the 120th Boston Marathon, April 18th. Mm-hmm. I know my wife is running the marathon. I'm not running nearly as far, but I'm doing something really cool with your running team called the Blindfold Challenge. What am I going to be doing on Saturday the 16th?
Well, I don't know if you're running as the...
I am the blindfolded person.
You're the blindfolded runner. Okay, yep. So the Blindfold Challenge is, we have, you know, eight teams, eight pairs of runners. Mm-hmm. One runner is blindfolded, and the other runner is that runner's guide. So you obviously don't have to be visually impaired to participate.
Right.
Basically, usually our pairs are all sighted individuals, but one person is blindfolded throughout the whole distance. So it's a 5K distance, and I think for a lot of people who've never, you know, you've had an incredible experience of losing your sight for a period of time. A lot of people have never had that experience. They, you know, some people, you know, the lights are out at your house and mm-hmm. you're panicked. It's like when you can't see even light, it can be, you know, very disorienting and very scary at times.
Right.
So now imagine throwing on a blindfold and going out and running five, you know, or running 3.1 miles. You know, it's quite an experience, and relying on your totally on your guide and hoping, you know, they don't take you the wrong way.
Right.
So it's a pretty awesome event. It really is. It's a fundraising event. Each of our pairs has a goal to raise $1,000, and all this money is going to help go towards our great educational programs here at Perkins, and so we can just keep providing the great service that we provide our students, and it's a great event. So.
Yeah, it's a cool event. And then, of course, you also have a team that's going to run the marathon on Patriots Day on the 18th, which you guys have
right.
done every year for many years.
Every year, yes. Every year we have our marathon team. In fact, I'll get to meet them tomorrow night. So
okay.
I don't even know them yet, but I'm looking forward to meeting our team tomorrow. So.
Yeah,
it'll be great.
It's well, you know, the marathon, it's an incredible experience. I'm assuming you might be out on the course or for part of it, you know, rooting some of the runners on. But the energy on Patriots Day, you know, nobody's working. You got people lined up from Hoptington, where it starts, all the way down to, you know, Boylestown near the Commons, where it finishes, cheering you on. And it just, you know, it's, you know, the Red Sox have a day game, which comes out early afternoon. While that, you know, it's the most energetic, amazing thing I've ever experienced. I told my wife, you know, she's so lucky to be able to do it, because it's like a once in a lifetime for me. It was twice in a lifetime experience. And it's just such a cool event. So I know Perkins actually, you had mentioned, though, getting back to some numbers, you guys actually have a reach that goes beyond just local or even the U.S., correct?
Yes. I know. You asked me how many people do we actually, you know, have an impact. And mm-hmm. I guess to sum that up, I'd say on campus it's in the hundreds. And regionally, it's in the thousands, and globally, it's in the millions.
Yeah, it's in the millions.
You know, I mean, that's really the reach that we have, because we have so many diverse programs, and because, you know, we have so many programs that are focused off-site, such as our international program and our community programs and our outreach programs. So, there's a lot going on here. You know, it's a great place. And I really value and appreciate how Perkins is constantly changing with the times. You know, it's it's, you know, education is not the same as it was 186 years ago in when we were founded. It's, you know, our mission is still the same in that our goal is to help people who are visually impaired reach their full potential. And if I was to sum up what we do, that is our goal. How we accomplish that goal is ever-changing and evolving, and it's based on the needs of individuals on a global scale, and it's based on what's current and relevant to all of us.
Yeah, do you have, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, do you have any estimates as to how many people worldwide are visually challenged?
It's
a big number. I know it's huge.
So I would be embarrassed if I got that wrong. I mean,
that's okay.
You know,
it's
in
a
the
huge
United
number.
States, I would say in the United States, there's some statistics around 30 million.
Right.
It depends on which numbers you look at and what the age range is, you know. So I do see 25 to 30 million Americans with vision loss, experiencing vision loss. And what's really, dramatic is that we are expecting that number, especially among our older adult population, to double. I mean, we're looking one in three.
Yeah, you might think, well, given where medical technology rests, you would expect that to decrease. We've got about 1 minute to go, but because of longevity, people living longer, also because we've turned into, I think, a very nearsighted, I don't mean in terms of looking at the future, but in terms of how we look at things and read, there are so many more people having just general eye issues because everything is so small that we look at, that number is projected to increase, which just blows my mind.
Yeah. I think something like one in three older adult over the age of 60 is going to have some vision loss that can't be corrected. So that's what we're looking at. That's our future. And we want to be here to support everyone. So, it's a scary number, but like I say, you know, it's not a matter of you can't do something. You just have to learn how to do it a little differently.
But Marla, really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Marla Runyon from Perkins School for the Blind. I'm going to see you folks back when I'm back in Boston here in about a week and a half. So really looking forward to
it.
Hopefully we'll have some great weather.
Great.
And again,
awesome.
Marla, really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Take care.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.